low-tox. You've heard the term, but do you know what it actually means? And why is it relevant to our gluten-free lives? Toxic chemicals are all around us. We eat them through our modern food production, breathe them in, and often put them on our skin. It's impossible to avoid all these toxins and chemicals out there. They're here, and we have to live amongst them, despite the fact they can have a huge impact on our health. So besides the option of hiding out in a hole or becoming a bubble boy, what can we do? Well, the good news is we have the ability to make changes in our lives to help reduce our exposure to these toxins and chemicals. And many of these changes are simple, cheap, free, or in some cases, they may even save you money. My guest today has been on a huge health and sustainability journey, one that has involved a mold illness and incorporating a gluten-free diet. Through this journey, she has learned so much and has since been on a mission to educate and help others. She came up with the term low-tox and now shares actionable tools which can help us live healthier and happier gluten-free lives. That's on today's episode of A Gluten-Free Podcast. Hey, welcome to A Gluten-Free Podcast, the show where we'll be exploring all things gluten-free. I'm your host, Ben. Whether you have celiac disease like me, you're gluten-free for other reasons, or you just want to learn more about the gluten-free diet, then this podcast is for you. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to A Gluten-Free Podcast. This is a weekly show where I talk to people all over the world about some really helpful and inspiring things that they're doing in the gluten-free community, while also sharing my own story of living with celiac disease and being a gluten-free dad here in Australia. And I have just come back from Sydney from a lovely holiday, very short holiday. I wish it was longer, with my wife and my two beautiful daughters. And we just had such a great time. And it's kind of just coming back here to reality, but it's so beautiful. We've come back and it's been such a lovely day. The sun has been out, the leaves are starting to fall. It's autumn time, and driving back through the Southern Highlands, it is just such a beautiful place that we live in. And it's never lost on me when I'm recording episodes for this podcast or just getting to live on this beautiful land with my family. I just can't believe that we're lucky enough to actually call this place home. But this is, was, and always will be Gundungurra country. And the Gundungurra people are the true custodians of this land. I would like to take some time to pay my respect to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge the stories, traditions, and living cultures of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. Also, I am not a health professional in any way. So anytime you hear anything on this podcast spoken by myself or my guests, please always remember to seek out your own personal medical advice before it comes to making any changes to your overall health or your diet, because what works for me and my guests on this show may not work for you at all. So please always remember this is general advice we're giving. Okay, let's get into today's episode. My guest on today's episode is founder of Low-Tox Life, Alex Stewart. We'll talk about Alex's gluten-free and overall health journey, the impact of low-tox methods on the gut microbiome, and some low-tox tips for you to implement in your own home, body, and mind. Alex, thank you so much for joining me here today.
It is an absolute pleasure to be here, Ben.
The universe works in very weird ways. In how all our paths cross. I was actually chatting to you on Instagram in the lead up to the Free From an Allergy show in Sydney, where you were emceeing. And then I didn't get a chance to chat to you there, but I saw you were introing, you know, a few people when they were speaking. But since then, we've been chatting on Insta a little bit. And a few months back, I was out with a mate of mine who I've played, you know, in a band with in the past. And we were at Gluten-Free Friends in Marrickville. And before we went to see a gig, we were just talking about my podcast and how that was going and, you know, being gluten-free, et cetera. And he said, oh, my cousin's wife actually has a podcast and it's called Low-Tox. And I was like, I just stopped him mid-sentence. I was like, Low-Tox Life? Are you kidding me, Alex Stewart? And he's like, yeah, do you know her? And I was like, that is too strange. That is so odd. But yeah, since then, I've actually started listening to your podcast and finding out a little bit more about what you do. And I'm so glad we've set up this podcast because we are currently going through a few of the things that you do talk about. We used to get organic fruit and veg, and we've just started ordering that again. I've had a few flare-ups recently, and I don't know if it's associated to that or, you know, just diet in general or other stuff going on. And also we've had a few issues with mold in our house as well. Being the Southern Highlands, very damp, it's been unseasonably humid. So there's just a lot to cover, and you cover so much yourself. And there's so much, as I'm sure you know, in this space for so long, there's so much conflicting advice out there these days in regards to our overall health.
Yeah.
And it can just be super overwhelming to absorb it all up. And after my celiac diagnosis, I've realized, you know, just the importance of, you know, not only knowing all these different ways that our health can be impacted, but also, and I know you're a big advocate for this, actionable steps that we can use to either mitigate or, you know, just help with our current health, our current state of health. So especially if we're living with, you know, chronic autoimmune diseases like celiac disease. So you're actually gluten-free yourself. And I didn't know this until recently. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start there. How did you become gluten-free? And yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
It was really interesting, actually. And it was my first foray into out-of-the-box, let's call it alternative medicine or unconventional, which is crazy to think because the ways that we look after ourselves through real food and herbal medicine, that's been a long way, around way longer than pharmaceutical has. But I had been on that antibiotic merry-go-round for tonsillitis. So many infections. It was crazy. And obviously tonsillitis is not just an infection itself, but it's a warning. You know, when tonsils flare up, it's a warning that there's something that there's just the body is not happy. I know that now. Back then, I did not know that. And holistically, you want to look at unpacking what is making the body so unhappy so that it can just get on with the job of being happy. That's actually what it is geared to do as this incredible biological machine that it is. And so, never mind the quantum aspect of things, which of course we're starting to learn more and more about. But as a 28-year-old who'd been, I guess, 3-4 times a year, maybe 5 sometimes in a really bad year on antibiotics because of tonsillitis, I got to the point where they no longer worked. I had tried all the medications that you could take for tonsillitis and I was antibiotic resistant, which is a scary place to arrive because if you've never been privy to any other way to look after yourself, then go to your doctor, get the pills, get better, and that doesn't work, then you think, well, what happens now? And it was a real moment. And I remember a girlfriend coming over to my house. I was living in Bondi and it was a bit of a hippie suburb as well. So, and she said, have you ever tried a naturopath? And I was like, what's that? No idea what that was. And this is only 20 years ago. I mean, now there's a naturopath on every street corner that you can hook into and bring into your health team. But back then it was still quite rare. And I said no, and I found one, and I found one a half hour drive away from my house. But she was in her 50s. She'd been practicing for decades and she was incredible. And I'll never forget the first appointment was this health professional asking me questions about me, my history, stress, where I live, what I eat for an hour. I'm like, what does she want to know all this stuff about me for? Because I had never actually been in that root cause paradigm. But she sorted out my tonsils literally that week with a combination of a couple of herbs in a revolting tasting elixir, which I now really have come to love, and a couple of vitamins and minerals that I really needed for my immune system to kick into gear. And 3 days later, I was better. But of course, 2 months later, I got tonsillitis again and I went back to her. I went, can I just get that same? She's like, well, we're not going to go on this merry-go-round. Let's try and figure out what's upsetting your body. There's some preliminary research on gluten, non-celiac gluten sensitivity, because I had celiac testing in this conversation kind of that lasted about 3 months before we decided, and recurrent strep throat. You could try leaving the gluten out of your diet for 3 months. And she gave me a little pamphlet with a list of all the different ways gluten can appear on a label. I mean, how much easier is all of this stuff now? You've got an app, you can just scan stuff. But the gift of this happening 20 years ago for me, Ben, was, yeah, I gave it a go. Yes, it was incredibly hard, and it taught me a lot of compassion for anyone having to live differently, because I'd never had to live differently to anyone else. So you just go with the flow. But as soon as you're the weird one, there's a lot of learning that comes from being the weird one that teaches you that everyone's weird in some way, shape, or form. And you become a much more compassionate, understanding human. And you also, in my case, stop getting tonsillitis. It was actually magic. And so I kept going with it. But 20 years ago, it actually meant quitting packaged food. And that's my favorite part about this happening 20 years ago, because if I'd done it now, as a 28-year-old, I could have just gone on to all the processed food equivalents that were gluten-free and still have been hampering my health in the ways that ultra-processed food does, whether it's got gluten in it or not, right?
Wow. Fascinating. I've actually, I had tons of antibiotics as a kid. And they're now looking into that, obviously, like the impacts of that on the gut microbiome and how that changes everything. But super fascinating in your instance, like that you just came across a naturopath and that was, you were recommended to go to one. There's still a big, area of it's hard, isn't it? Like to talk about the naturopath ways to modern medical science and just the way that GPs usually do things. And I found that I've become much more open to people, their journeys and their approaches to these things, especially because I speak to so many people and I've been through this myself. Just such a hard time with going to just GPs and things not being looked at from a root cause. It is just sort of like a chasing your tail thing, and no disrespect, I always say that to either naturopaths or the other side as well, modern medicine, because I
Oh,
think
100%. I've got to agree with you there. And for me, it's not about ditching one for the other,
for sure.
because there are things that I go to my GP for that I wouldn't ever consider going to my naturopath for, and vice
And
versa
vice
now.
versa.
You
Yes.
know, it really is about building a health team that cares about the whole individual and their life and the different things that can happen at different points in your life that either one of those types of professionals, and look, for other people, it could be an acupuncturist or a chiropractor. There are many different ways to support your health. And in different scenarios, there are actually people who are best placed. And it's about building a team that you feel like is really behind you and never puts you down. And is open to understanding that you're getting results from other types of health professionals without poo-pooing anybody else. That for me is like a big red flag. It's like results are what the common goal of all health professionals are. And that's what we've got to focus on, I think.
100%. And that's like sort of what I was leading into, just that integrative medicine. I truly believe that that will be 100% the future. Just combining those approaches. I really hope so,
Yeah, me
for
too.
the sake of everybody. But I'm so glad that you, like on your own journey, that you found this, and that you taking gluten out of the diet. Did you see like a really big improvement, like straight away once you took gluten
It
out?
was huge. I mean, to have a whole year of my life without a single infection was actually quite strange to me. Like, I just kept expecting to get sick, and I never did. And this is not to, like, I definitely don't demonize any kind of whole food. And I think there are some really interesting cultural and agricultural conversations around gluten and how it's farmed and hybridized and modified in different parts of the world, and why certain protein levels that have been doctored might be playing into some of the gluten sensitivities and autoimmune celiac that we're seeing so prevalent around the world today. But for me, it was night and day. And for the next person, It could be dairy. For the next person, it could be treating their PTSD. I mean, there are so many different root causes, mold, you name it. But in terms of something that was stressing my body out, it was definitely a huge factor because once your body's not so stressed, it's got a lot more energy for that immune system to do its job.
Yes, and so great that you got celiac testing during that time too, to rule that out, because so many just go gluten free
It's
like
important.
I did. And then had to go back on gluten to get the gluten challenge. And yeah, it's not the best way to do it. So if you can do it the other way around, it's great. But so you were gluten free. How did you go into this low tox journey? How did that all begin?
Well, it began because it was 20 years ago, right? So I go to the supermarket and I start looking at all the things I buy, the lean cuisine, the up and go poppers, all the things that were a part of my busy young hospitality bar manager, don't have time to always cook or make a meal. So I had to have those quick grab and go situations that didn't take up my brain space. Plus, Gen X learned how to cook sweets at birthday times, but not so much. Like a lot of us missed out growing up in the 80s when they got rid of food tech, or me not having elders around where you'd typically be in the kitchen with your grandma. She lived overseas. I didn't learn how to cook. So I was really just prime candidate for processed foods and ready meals, and they all had gluten in them. So it was this reckoning of, not only because I was having to work out, oh, hydrolyzed vegetable protein, that's actually gluten in this one, because it can be, right? Once you write to the company, and I mean, anyone who's been through it knows that it's a huge ordeal dealing with a food allergy or intolerance or celiac. So,
Yes.
for me, it was this light bulb moment of around injustice. How are food companies allowed to not only be so secretive about what's going into their products when it comes to gluten, because it had so many different possibilities, but what the heck is all this other stuff in here? And how on earth, I was starting to pick up books at the library and read things, and I was like, how on earth can a red food dye that is known to contribute to hyperactivity in children be one of the primary things that we're putting on birthday cakes and into sweets? How is that legal? And I'd always been an idealist growing up. I was a songwriter, a poet in my teens, and for me, it was like this moment, like a little full circle moment, where that 16-year-old Alex who wanted to change the world had actually kind of started to think, well, hold on. Our food system is stuffed, because once I started looking into produce, I thought, gosh, that's not even simple. Like, where is this from? How is it farmed? I just kept going to the ends of the earth to get answers to the questions that were starting to pop up on this journey of, well, what the hell can I eat that really, really is good? And then it came to being pregnant with my gorgeous one and only boy, and the baby shower comes, and you get the gifts from the well-meaning friends, and they're all sort of lovely in their generosity. But I'd learned how to read food levels really well by now, and I was like, ooh, I'll just check out what's in this stuff. And I'd come from a cosmetics background in my earlier part of the career, and I was horrified. And the penny dropped that we were always trained on the first couple of ingredients that you could kind of recognize, or the rare algae from the Aegean Sea for the wrinkles, or the hyaluronic acid for the hydration of the skin. Then there were all these other chemical names that we never touched. And in researching those, I was horrified to find ingredients that were sometimes known or suspected carcinogens, that were known or suspected endocrine disruptors, so things that could fiddle with our hormone signaling or production. And I just, this huge sense of injustice came up in me, and I started to find products that didn't contain these things. And I thought, I'm pretty sure any logical thinking person out there would really like this information. And so a blog started, and that's really where Low Tox Life began. A humble blog while my son napped during the day and was asleep at night.
Wow. Can I just ask, like, did you have a point where you were going down this rabbit hole and researching and, you know, looking at different additives? And like, cause I've done that myself, like just having to read labels now and knowing so much more about additives and what they are and what they're made up of. It is freaking scary, the amount of crap that they put in, you know, to products these days. But did you get to a point where it was like, this is too much? Like I can completely understand, like, you know, you needing to like show that to people and having that urge to be like, I need to tell other people about this so they know about it. But was there a point where it was like, this is blowing my mind. Like I just kind of want to just hide away now and maybe not research this anymore. Or did it go the other way and you just wanted to start advocating for it and telling everybody about it?
Definitely the latter.
Yeah, right.
I am a teacher, trainer, coach, executive coach, business consultant. So all of those skills that I had amassed in the first few years of my life working, and, you know, I'd been even doing teaching as a kid. I was teaching kids how to dance. I was tutoring. I was always training and teaching. And so for me, it's very natural to distill complex ideas, thoughts, and learnings and make them easy for other people to understand. That is literally my zone of genius. And I thought, I can use that here. And it was just so exciting to me to help people who were really overwhelmed or who wanted to do better, but just didn't know how to prioritize what that looked like for them. Because you know what it's like on the internet. You said it in your intro, Ben. It's like, yeah, there is so much information. There are so many contradictions. And what's often missing is what we know for sure and how to help someone not always feel like they have to panic and look externally for answers, but to actually have an inside conversation or a look around their family and their kids and go, what is the biggest priority for us right now? What's really not working and what do we want to do better? Start there and only look there and only for resources that feel clarifying, supportive, and empowering rather than scaring you half to death about that one tiny thing that you're going to do and it's going to be toxic and kill everybody. I just think health 2.0 is mass simplification and empowerment of what we know for sure. And yes, when there are chronic instances like me navigating mold, I had to look into genetics and I had to, you know, I just had to do so much work around histamine and mast cell activation and then blending perimenopause and changing hormones into it. It got very granular and health sometimes does. But so often health doesn't need to get so granular. It is actually pretty basic. And I talk about easy inputs. Like, what are our easy health inputs? Are you looking up at the sky and getting good outside time? Are you grounding? Are you eating good whole foods, at least most of the time? And, you know, it's why I'm so passionate about we do what we do most of the time so we can go with the flow some of the time, you know, because people get lost in the imperfect moments and blow those out of proportion instead of empowered sort of focus on what we can do every day. It's actually really easy and lovely for ourselves. It's not a have to and a try and fit it in. And that's where we want to get people to with health, whether they're dealing with a disease, whether they're dealing with an allergy or a sensitivity. I think it's a better place to try and aim for than to try and know all the things, because knowledge doesn't mean transformation and change and ease. It can actually be where you get stuck and overwhelmed.
100%. And I think what you were talking about earlier there with those two boats of people just like thinking, oh, there's this toxic thing and it's going to kill me and it's everywhere. Nah, that's too much. Or like there's like that curiosity where they're like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, I might just watch out for that and I might just tweak some things I do. And then, you know, it's going to be part of our lives and it's out, you know, we can't escape it, but just to be aware of it. I think there's those two boats and hopefully, you know, in the future we can, it will be more, you know, well known, all of this stuff. And I'm just actively just like dipping my feet in the water, figuring out all this stuff. And there's so much, But you talked about just briefly about mold there. What was your experience with mold?
Yeah, well, that's a 3-day seminar, Ben.
Okay.
Again, you know, 8 years ago, which is crazy to think of the mold awareness timeline that has happened since, but I was alone with 37 symptoms, being bounced around to so many different scans, blood tests, GPs, integrative doctors, naturopaths. Like, I was throwing everything at this, and it was me who had to figure out the mold piece. Someone helped me overseas who cost $700 an hour on a Zoom consult. I mean, I had already spent probably about 20 grand of our savings at this point.
Wow.
Just trying to figure me out. Like, I was like, how can a human feel like they're about to die and nobody be able to figure out what's wrong with them? How can a cardiologist shrug their shoulders and say it's very typical for women to start having some heartbeats that just kind of skip and
arrhythmia.
Every now and then in their 40s. And I had only just turned 40, by the way. And it's very typical for a woman to experience brain fog into their 40s. Again, only just turned 40 and very, very healthy prior, like very. So it was mind-blowing to me that no one was talking environmental toxins to the degree of literally being unable to function as a human. And it all just came in the question of, have you ever had a water leak that you remember in your house or seen mold or smelt mustiness? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, I think this is where we need to dig. And so I started digging and I found every paper I could. There was some interesting stuff in Europe. There was a great doctor in America, Dr. Richie Shoemaker, who had identified a cluster of chronic fatigue syndrome cases linked to a huge water event in a particular town. And away I went. I started studying genetics. I started studying nervous system health. I started studying the links between the nervous system, the immune system, and how that then plays out into literally every system in the body. And so mold is not all bad. Like, I don't want people to look at a mushroom at the shops and go, oh my God, it's going to kill me. It's a fungi. That's not even all molds that you would find in the house, like some growing on your lemon, the green stuff in a fruit bowl on a hot, humid summer's day. It's no big deal. Just chuck it. It's fine. So I really don't want people to panic. And even mold growing on the surface of a bathroom tile because your bathroom is just super humid because you're not controlling humidity yet, the humidity issue is not even a massive mold issue. But water damage is a big issue. And the molds that grow from water events that go unchecked, say a roof leak that doesn't get properly repaired and the drywall doesn't get replaced, you know, the whole paint over it is not fixing mold. That is the number one thing I want everybody to take away. If you're a beginner in this subject, do not paint over mold and think you've fixed the problem. You have not. You have to remove all drywall and contaminated materials. A lot of people think, oh, but can't I spray some vinegar on it? No. You have to remove mold. Don't try to kill it. There's absolutely no point. Can't I just spray what kind of paste can I make for the grout in my shower or the silicone? Get a tradie in if you're not handy yourself. Get it all replaced and start dehumidifying your environment correctly. That's how you fix a mold problem in a bathroom. So it really took me, I'll spare the health journey because it really is very complicated and took a long time to piece together all of the different aspects. But what it led me down the path of was how critically important the health of our homes. I'd always known since I'd sort of thought about low tox, you know, scented candles and the impact of those endocrine disruptors in our home air and, you know, the dryer going with dryer sheets, pumping out all that fake fragrance or fabric softener. And I knew about the indoor environment needing to be clean, but I still, at that point 8 years ago, had only really thought mold was just annoying rather than a health hazard. And that's what most of us think, right? And then you start realizing that exit mold and products like that are actually completely futile because they're majority water. So, yeah, you're getting rid of the color of mold with the bleach, but you're actually giving mold a water source. And the fact that you've given it a fight can often make it stronger, just like an antibiotic where you don't finish the course and you don't fully kill the bug, it just grows back stronger. So we're seeing that with fungi, and we're seeing different bacteria and other mycotoxins, a number of things that are coming off your humble mold spore that can be really harmful to human health. So if that's something people want to learn more about, I have a huge resource called So You Think You've Got Mold, and it like literally steps you through everything you need in terms of shows that we've done with different doctors, building biologists, builders, etc. Because I think we can't do it justice here. But if I can give everybody one tip who's like, hold on, but I've got mold now and I want to know what to do. The first thing you do is you think, is this a leak? Is this from like rising damp? You know, is like, can I see bubbling paint around a skirting board or tea staining around a ceiling? Then I need a health, a building professional, like a building biologist, to come and assess what the situation is, where the moisture is coming from, and then I need it removed and remediated. But if you just live in a humid climate that has a humid season or a rainy season, like it's pouring with rain outside here in Sydney at the moment, big storm today, and I've got a 50-litre dehumidifier, which is a big, powerful unit. It's an AusClimate unit, and we have 10% off those units as a community. So you can use the code LOTOXLIFE if anyone wants one. But that was full before I jumped on today. We're recording this at midday. That was full, the tank. So many, many litres, not 50 litres, because it just means 50 litres it can take in 24 hours.
Right.
But a good sort of six litres, I guess that tank would be, seven.
Wow.
Before lunchtime on a rainy day. And a lot of people just don't realize that's how much moisture is just sitting around our homes. And if your home is regularly 60% humidity or more, which you can test with a hygrometer or a climate gauge, $20 online, really cheap, then you, within 2 to 3 days, can start to experience mold activation or growth in your home. So having dehumidifiers is actually just one of the best things you can do. If you live anywhere coastally, it's a non-negotiable. You know, you hear horror stories about people going away on holidays and coming back and there's just mold everywhere when their house was shut up in a January kind of situation.
Yeah.
Or these Airbnbs that haven't been rented for a while and you get there and they're awful. It's a really big problem, humidity control. So I would say baby step to starting to think about doing better on the mold front and preventing it is get a hygrometer or a climate gauge. AusClimate has those too. And start to be aware. Put a couple around your house because sometimes, depending on orientation, you can have like a shady part of the house that has a bit more trouble drying out after rain. That back bedroom that's a bit more shady, that's always around the 60-70% mark. And when it's raining, it's like 85. We need to put a dehumidifier in there and run it every morning for a few hours. Because if you dry everything out, then you've got another 2 days before mold might grow. So in a humid season, doing a bit of a roster, moving it around the different rooms that you're not in for a few hours at a time is a brilliant way to keep everything dry. Then you're protecting sheets, mattresses, quilts, pillows, shoes, bags. So many people just actually have a humidity problem, not even a giant damp problem in terms of building structure. And so I really like to point that out, A, so that not everybody panics and thinks they've got $100,000 remediation on their hands.
Yeah.
But B, because you notice the health effects, people's congestion just disappears so quickly once you get that humidity under control. And if you've got mold on soft furnishings now, give it a go to chuck quilts, sheets, clothes, anything that can go in the wash on a really hot wash with borax. That can be a really helpful way to neutralize and stop the mold situation. So hopefully that gives people a few little ideas on what they could do. But I can say, having been through chronic inflammatory response syndrome, it is genuinely the most awful feeling in the world. And not only are you dealing with the initial toxic threat of mold, but once you've healed and detoxed, you have a sort of medical PTSD because your cells remember the threat, your nervous system remembers the threat. And then all it takes is just being at a mate's house who's got a dirty aircon for a couple of hours at a barbecue, and your whole body sends off alarm bells on your behalf where you're not even really in danger. So there's a very interesting piece long term that often people find they need to do some sort of rewiring mental therapy like EMDR or Gupta program or things like that, that you just so that you're not constantly trapped in this alarm state, which actually a lot of celiac people over the years that I've spoken to can benefit from as well, because it's quite awful to go through something where something becomes dangerous to you. Like mentally, we don't often talk about the lingering consequence of, no, don't eat that, it's going to make you sick. No, don't touch that, sweetie, it's going to give you an anaphylactic shock and we'll be in the hospital. Like, that is a lot for the system to deal with, and it imprints on our nervous systems and can activate symptoms that we're not technically needing to experience, which, if anyone's really new to this stuff, this can sound a bit woo-woo, but
No.
Psychoneuroimmunology, PNI, is fascinating. And I really believe it's one of the big keys to unlocking chronic illness for people.
We'll be right back after this short break. Question, gluten-free fam. Do you wish there were regular opportunities to meet up with others in the gluten-free community at venues and with businesses who actually look after us gluten-free folk? Me too. And that's why I've started a gluten-free evening. A gluten-free evening is all about connecting with others who are gluten-free, learning from the owners of venues and businesses who are making safe gluten-free food for us, and you'll also walk away with a gluten-free goodie bag full of products, samples, and discounts from your favorite gluten-free brands. We sold out our launch in February, and we've already had so many requests for more. Make sure you're following our Instagram, which is in the show notes, to find out where the next one is. See you there, gluten-free fam. We now have a Facebook group for the show. Search A Gluten-Free Podcast in groups and it'll pop right up. Come and join the conversation with other listeners where we're sharing ideas about current and future episodes and just have a chat about general gluten-free life. See you on there. All right, back to the podcast. A 100%. And that, you know, the gut hypnotherapy, we're going to go into a bit more of that this year. And just that gut brain axis is
yes,
so, so important. And I've noticed that just in my own journey recently, but thank you so much for sharing that with your own mold health journey. And
you're welcome.
And just tips for people out there too. I'm 100% going to buy one of those. My wife will be like just clapping right now knowing about that. We're just actively looking at mold in the house and just some, you know, historic leaks and stuff. So very, very interesting. But if we could just back up a little bit just to ask, like just to define low tox itself.
Yeah.
And
I know
why...
we've been talking for like 40 minutes and we haven't done that.
No, it's absolutely fine. No. What it actually is and why you touched on it a lot there, you know, with inflammation and with mold and, but there's so many different areas that you cover in your podcast and on your website. And as you said, you have so many resources. So I really would encourage people to go check that out if they want to learn more really specifically about all those different areas. But just generally what low tox is and why we should be interested in it in, you know, the celiac and gluten-free community especially.
So I came up with the term, and I'm Gen X, so I'm one of those, like I'm from old school where you had to have a really original name when you were starting something. And I just love how people have taken the term and run with it. I really do, because it has come to mean something for so many people, right? And what it is we can't have a world of no tox. That's actually not possible. We are way too far into the industrial revolution to believe that even if we went into the middle of a field in a yurt, that we would be completely free from toxins, because we've found things like PCBs and PFOAs in the Arctic. So there are toxins everywhere. Low tox was a term I came up with after researching better options across, everyday products, cleaning, food, things that we would get our babies to play on, and to sip from, and all the rest. I thought we need it to be low tox, not no tox, because A, perfection sucks as a goal. It's
Amen.
awful, awful for everybody's mental health.
Yeah.
And B, it is flexible. It's like, you know what? I can't work on that now. I don't have the money to change the mattress on my bed right now. So I'm going to focus on just up leveling in the food department when it comes to our kids' snacks. That's what I'm going to do. And over here, this person, they're going to start buying less fast fashion and synthetic fibers and try and stick to central sort of cotton linen situation with their clothes. And then another person's going to have another interest, and another person's going to be wading through mold illness and needing to really take all the body burdens away that they possibly can so their body can heal. Celiac disease, quite similar. So someone with celiac or a food sensitivity, low tox really matters, because it's food, body, home, and mind. And as I was saying, the mind is a huge piece of health. There are some really interesting ideas coming forward and healings happening when we look at quantum biology and subconscious rewiring. If you look at the work of Joe Dispenza, I mean, I was at one of his retreats, and at that retreat that I was at, where we were meditating like 10 hours a day, we had one woman who didn't need glasses anymore. And we had another person whose dairy allergy was completely healed. Just in the space of this subconscious rewiring. So there's some pretty interesting stuff happening in health, which is why the mind category for me is very, very important. It's also not a promise, because science is always moving around and different things connect with different people, which I think is unto itself a great example of how powerful the mind is when we find a way. And a connection and a synchronicity to support ourselves. But then food and body, like what we're putting on us, what we're eating, putting in us, huge, massive. I mean, that's what makes us as things regenerate and cells replicate. And then the home, we are spending more time than ever inside our homes. Not great, by the way, like we shouldn't, but we are. And so, how can we make those healthier? And so, those are the pillars: food, body, home, mind. And then, what's interesting to me is when we start to make these beautiful changes for ourselves, is certainly something I noticed. Well, wow, this is a win for me and for the planet if I eat less food out of packets. This is a win for me and for the planet if I stick to natural fibers in my wardrobe. And buy less in general, and really stick to what I need, either for a current health crisis that I'm on, or for living in the city, like with blue light tech or things like that. I'm not saying don't buy anything, because there's some really helpful stuff in modern life, but be more mindful. And it all fits into the overall piece of health for me. And the more people I interview, the more I realize how much plays into leading a healthy, happy life. And so low tox kind of just brings it all together, all the great ideas, all the great ways, and let someone dip in wherever they're at with whatever the priority is at. And away you go. Let's get making changes and feel better.
I've been listening to your podcast recently, and an area which you have repeatedly, explored is the gut microbiome. And we've been talking about that just over this episode too. And a recent episode that you released with a doctor, which was super fascinating about probiotics, prebiotics.
Jason, yeah, Jason Horrolak, he's a legend.
Very, very interesting episode. And I'm diving into the gut microbiome now, and did a little bit last year. And after speaking to some people, some experts in this field, it's unbelievable. And I feel like we're just on the cusp of that. Like in the last like decade or two, the research in this space is like in its absolute infancy. And after speaking to like, I spoke to Dr. Alessio Fasano, Dr. Vincent Ho.
Awesome.
Yeah. And Professor Jason Tyerdin, and we'll be doing some episodes together in the future. And their views on how important it is to our overall health and how much potential it holds is like, it blows my mind. What are some, you know, some sort of impacts that, yeah, the low-tox methods has that you've seen on the gut microbiome, like specifically?
Well, I think if we look at what we know for sure, which is trying to remove as much packaged food as we possibly can that's been ultra processed, like very useful for sending soldiers off to war. You know, I talk about this historical food journey in my second book, Low Tox Life Food, where that was the birth of lots of grain-based products because they were long life when we processed them into cereals and biscuits and crackers. Mm. And it meant our soldiers would have food for months while away and years. That's not what life is. We can duck down to a market or pop into a Woolies if that's what you shop from because that's what your town has. No judgment. But we can access produce and real food real easy these days. Unless you're in one of the more unfortunate spaces of a food desert, where I've visited some of these. We've got some in Australia where you have to cross a highway to get to a supermarket. So what do you do if you're in a low socioeconomic situation without a car? You go to the KFC on the corner. So I really want to just acknowledge that I am very aware that this is a privilege as well, but it is easy for a lot of us to access produce. And what produce is live food. It is food that gives us enzymes, amino acids, and it gives it to us in the package that nature intended, which means it's the most easy for our body to understand and to absorb. Now, yes, there are going to be situations based on our intergenerational issues with the microbiome, passing on a poorer and poorer microbiome to the next generations through processed food, through antibiotic use. There are a number of factors that play into why you might have trouble with whole foods of some kind. We can talk oxalates, you know, we can get really granular, but the point is everyone can find something they can eat in the whole food space. Mm. And that is live food that is going to give us the maximum amount of nutrition. And when we get the maximum amount of nutrition, we can make the maximum amount of things like we have a better chance of making serotonin and dopamine. I know, for example, as someone with ADHD, when I was a kid eating junk food or in my 20s, I was hopeless. I was really, really hopeless. I could not hold a conversation. I couldn't get up in front of a group of people. I was a debater, so I was very smart, but I had to write down every single word of my speech to remember it all. Now, no issues, very, very sharp brain. And I definitely attribute that to improving my gut health. We know that things like vitamin C increase when we ferment a food. So if you look at cabbage as a basic cabbage in a cabbage salad, let's say, or a soup versus a fermented sauerkraut, the vitamin C levels go through the roof. So, and it's more bioavailable because it's been through its fermentation already rather than our guts trying to do that processing work. So there's some fascinating stuff that we can do to improve ourselves through food. And I couldn't find a person who has not made that transition from simply looking at their trolley and making their one goal this year to eliminate a few products and swap them for a bit more produce, and who hasn't noticed a change. It's impossible. I mean, because it is just so obvious how much more important that is to our makeup as a biological animal. So that for me would be the number one, really. Just look at your trolley and go, products, whoa, there's quite a few. I really want to make my goal a shift towards produce. And I'm not saying be some sort of martyr who only does 100, you know, and you're having to make everything from scratch. And that's just not realistic. It's certainly not me. I'm a bit of a 10% is leeway and free for all. Like, let's just not feel guilty and awful about ourselves. I'm a big fan of a nice plain corn chip on occasion, and we'll just have it with guacamole to slow the insulin response down, for example. So there's just so much you can do if you decide, you know what, I want to make this journey fun. Surround yourself with really fun people on Instagram or soothing people. Like, a lot of people say that my voice sounds really soothing when I'm teaching people. And so that just makes you feel like, okay, I can do this. You really want that rather than people stressing you out about the modern toxic world, which, yes, it goes viral. And yes, they have huge social media accounts. That's because of our negative human bias, but it's actually very bad for our health to make that our primary source for change, because you will end up changing in a fight or flight response versus in a calm, I really want to do this response. And what is calm? I really want to do this. It's good for our guts. That's what it is, because the nervous system impacts gut function so massively. And I see this firsthand when I'm dealing with mold myself. If I'm in an environment where it's really quite musty for a couple of days, let's say a hotel, my entire digestive system seizes up. It's like it just presses pause, can't do it. And that's because my nervous system has said to my gut, now is not the time to be trying to digest things. We're trying to make our way through this situation. I get out of that moldy situation. I take a bit of charcoal to just clean out the toxins. Fine. After that, no issues with my gut. And so I really think if you're having big time gut issues and you haven't looked, you've done the whole food thing and you're like, yeah, it's easy for her to say, I've done all of that. What's next? The nervous system. Look at your vagal tone. Just, you don't have to do expensive programs. Just Google vagus nerve exercises on YouTube. Start trying a few and see if just getting into a more relaxed trough once or twice a day impacts your gut health. Because I know for most people that I've coached or worked with, chatted to, it's a huge piece of the puzzle. And, you know, I can't tell you how many people spend thousands and thousands of dollars on different gut protocols and put themselves through really tricky dietary changes that the kids don't want to go on, and everyone's kicking and screaming, and you've got a partner in the background going, why do we have to do all of this? Whereas if sometimes, I will say gut protocols can be really helpful, but sometimes the nervous system work is what just actually gets the whole body to calm down and become better at digesting in the first place.
So many great tips there. Some great tips and tools. You were mentioning something throughout when you were just speaking just there. Finding balance. It seems like the older I get, it's just seems like there's a cost to every decision that we make, you know, whether that be in work or diet changes or stress levels or like exposure to harmful chemicals or, you know, eating organic, processed food, social media, alcohol, like the list, it goes on. So when someone hears like low tox is important, they might think, you know what, it's too much. Like they'll just shut themselves off. You know, they'll like, I've got a mortgage, need to put food on the table. I can't afford it at the moment. Work stressful, got a chronic autoimmune disease. Like they wouldn't know where to start, or, you know, they don't have the money for it. How do you think, it's a big question, but, and you were touching on it there, but how do you think we can balance the conversation around, you know, being physically and mentally healthy while juggling all of that? And like in being environmentally conscious, in like living in a financial crisis and like in an information overload of time, like you said on social media, everybody is just shouting at us, like, do this, do that. And it's conflicting information. And then around that, the marketing, which is just guilt and shame, like it is just marketed at us from that point of view. What's your view on that, navigating that?
So my view on the fact that it costs more to be healthy is false. It's just that you don't know enough, you don't have enough literacy to make it cost neutral. And sometimes people save money. So if you look at frugal cooking, learning how to meal morph and use things you've got rather than always having to buy new or always having to go off recipes, I can see that's a huge pain point. Recipe-based cooking is expensive. That's the most expensive kind of cooking you can do. Frugal grandma cooking, where you chuck some onions, carrots, celery, some type of meat, couple cups of stock into a saucepan, slow cook, sometimes with passata and French herbs, sometimes without passata and curry powder and a coconut cream. Like that kind of cooking, it's cheap. You could even, if you're vegetarian, do that with legumes, even cheaper than meat. Or you could mix it up, get both. So the food part, like I want you to cost all of your packet snacks and how quickly kids ask for more food after eating those packet snacks, because processed grain-based snacks, gluten-free or not, are very quick energy. So very exciting to humans because that's literally what we're wired for. I need energy now. I got to fight a lion. Like, I need it
Yes.
now. So we're wired for that, but it's actually not useful to us in modern life at all. It actually creates stress. It's very hard to digest in the forms that we eat it in now. And it's very expensive per like because there's no nutrients in it. So your body processes the energy quick because it's very high carb. And then it's like, okay, what's next? I still need food here because it hasn't been nourished. And so if you reabsorb the cost of snacks into your meals, I promise you, it's cost neutral. Forget organic if you can't do that right now. Forget regenerative ag and expensive, online options. I get that. But like just switching from products to produce with a bit of frugal cooking skills built in there, it's cheaper, 100%. It's a bit of a marketing project to get families on board, but it can be done, at least for the main. We don't want our kid thinking they can't have the something at the party table, and like be militant about it either. But you can definitely start making swaps that won't affect your budget. In fact, if anything, that can affect it positively. But then from the cleaning and personal care products, I mean, look at the cost of those, say, pump soaps at the supermarket. And how much everybody goes through of them. And look at the cost of a bar soap. And, a great low tox bar soap, like a, I don't know, a Dr. Bronner's or even just an olive oil one at your local market that someone's made, you can turn that into a soap cream. So it makes a big bottle. With a really, really easy technique of just letting it soak for a bit and then blending it with some filtered water. And it is so cheap. Or you can just cut your bar soap into little ones to travel with. So you don't need to buy expensive travel products when you're going camping or whatever. There are so many ways. You don't need dryer sheets. You don't need fabric softener. You don't need room fresheners and sprays, and you don't need toilet ducks. You don't need any of that. So you're actually saving money on a lot of things. And then you can be a bit more strategic on where you spend it, or you just decide to save it full stop. If you've already got sheets, you don't need to replace them with organic sheets. That's the internet telling you need to do that. If your sheets are threadbare, and you wanted to then find a more ethical solution, make sure there wasn't polyester in them. Yeah, that's a time that you make that purchasing decision. You find a really good value one that suits your budget because it exists now. We are spoilt for choice. But it's going low tox is certainly not about finding things you need to buy that you didn't realize you needed to buy. It's about finishing something up and going, this has a synthetic smell. We don't even need this. I'm going to stop buying fabric softener altogether. You don't need to go find the low tox equivalent. It does nothing. If you really want super soft towels, use some bicarb soda. That'll do the same. So it's a misconception that it's expensive. Chronic illness can be expensive. Sure. Like,
100%.
having to buy like or dealing with a mold issue. Yeah, you got to get dehumidifiers. Yeah, you might need an air purifier for your kid with dust mite allergy. Those low tox changes, that's expensive, sure. But I see those as investments because they're much cheaper than, ER visits, and much less mentally taxing as well. And mold remediation, 5 years down the track, when you've ignored a problem, that $800 visit from the mold technician all of a sudden seems really cheap that you should have done 8 years ago. So I just think thinking a bit more holistically, like if I ignore the roof leak and don't address this now, it's going to cost so much. I mean, it really will cost a ton of money down the track. So could you spend a bit more money there? Where could we cut money? It doesn't need to be a conversation of add, spend more. It's what is our family's priority? I'll come back to what I said right at the start of our chat. What are we working on? What do we want to make better right now? Does that cost money, that particular change that we are prioritizing? Well, where can we pull from to just tighten up this month and invest in that instead? And always use the word investment if it's your health, because that's actually what you're doing. Certainly, if you're a homeowner, that is absolutely what you're doing when you're actually looking after your home instead of painting over an actual problem.
Yeah, investing in yourself as well as the monetary values as well. So important. You've already accomplished so much with Low Tox Life, and I'm actively looking into this at the moment. All your resources and your books and your podcasts. You have just a ton of information out there. I was just
I know
scrolling
there's a
through.
lot now, 15 years.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about in this space, and it's super interesting. And you have so many actionable tools for people as well. What's coming up next for you with Low Tox Life and and just yourself personally?
So myself personally is I'm just so thrilled that the COVID years are done and it's just getting out there and speaking to community groups, corporate groups again. And it's something I love actually connecting in person. So I love that this year that is, it just seems to naturally be starting up again, which is awesome. One thing we're putting together is a really simple video course for people wanting to start. Across all aspects of low tox living, we've got courses that address food specifically, really in-depth courses on reducing environmental toxins. We've got preconception, inflammation, like a lot of very specific courses, but I've put together a bit of an overview program that's going to be really accessible. My whole ethic is access for all, not a few rich people benefiting from some expensive internet protocol. And so that'll be out shortly. And that's pretty much where we're operating. But something I do because of my background in consulting and executive coaching is a couple of times a year, also helping businesses in the healthier people, healthier planet space grow, because we need a lot more people doing really well at running businesses that actually help change things. As some people say, oh, but there's already so much in health and wellness. I'm like, that's not what the cereal maker is saying to themselves who's just launching another new cereal. They're going, yeah, I can find a way, I can push through, I can. We need good people actually having that kind of confidence and thinking, how can I bring something powerful as a service or a product to market to help change health. And so Low Tox Method was born out of that as a bit of a mentoring program.
Very cool. Very cool. Before I let you go, can you let listeners know where they can find you on socials and purchase your books, and sign up to your courses and listen to your podcast too?
So the easy thing is Low Tox Life is trademarked. So wherever you see Low Tox Life as three words together, that's me.
That's yours. Yep.
Low tox, a lot of different people have done different things with that phrase, but low tox life is me. It's lowtoxlife.com. The podcast is called Low Tox Life. My first book is called Low Tox Life. Second one, Low Tox Life Food. So if you just Google Low Tox Life, you'll find everything.
Awesome. What do you think I should include next on this podcast? It can be a guest suggestion, just any topic, expanding on an area we've chatted about here today, absolutely anything.
I love that question. Fantastic. I think for gluten-free and celiac families, it's really interesting to explore the different ways that some people seem to no longer be celiac who once were. I think it's very frontier science, but we are starting to see cases of reversal of all sorts of food allergies. Like, what is the path? Like, for someone who might want to explore, okay, I know this is us now, but I also want to have in the back of my mind that in my lifetime, this might be much more easily treatable. I think it's a really interesting subject.
Very, I'm not aware of like any reversals happening, once you have celiac disease. I have heard of many people who perhaps have like had a diagnosis of celiac disease, and then they found out that they do not in fact have celiac disease. Like they've done the endoscopy and the biopsy, and they've figured out that they've been misdiagnosed. But I'm not aware of anybody actually being able to reverse it. I know of people who have no symptoms later on, like are asymptomatic. But it's just it fascinates me too that celiac disease versus just like non-celiac gluten sensitivity, why that's happening and why people have such severe symptoms as well, even if they don't have celiac disease. It's an interesting area for sure.
So interesting. And I think, we're learning more and more about how, fiber isn't necessarily the be all end all. And so I sometimes wonder whether lots of grain in general is like just really not a great idea for our biology and not, if you look at food pyramid science and how that came about, some pretty interesting stuff happened to make grains a recommended 6 to 11 serves a day. Very controversial in the 70s. But then you look at protein hybridization of plants and how agricultural chemicals have impacted. Like when I go back to France and spend time with my relatives, I can eat gluten with the assistance of a gluten, like a digestive enzyme, and enjoy it there. Here, I really can't. Like I cramp up, it's awful. And I think that's really interesting as well. And there's some pretty interesting conversations happening scientifically in that space, as well as in the quantum space or in, subconscious. You think of Bruce Lipton's work or Dr. John DeMartini's work, people who are thinking way wider than the granular and thinking about stress, trauma, and how that can actually then create autoimmune pathologies, and how the reversal of the stress and the trauma can actually then, like you say, make people asymptomatic. Which, even if you've still got a celiac label, wouldn't asymptomatic be amazing? So it's a complex one. It's ambitious, but I think it's exciting to be hopeful that where we've gotten ourselves in such a short space of time, with so many people being afflicted by non-celiac gluten sensitivity and celiac disease, what would it take for that to not be the reality anymore and to not have to freak out if something's been cross-contaminated in a deep fryer and, to get a little less sensitive? Because I think in our lifetime, that's going to be very realistically achievable.
100%. I hope it is. And I hope that like the severity of, celiac disease, what happens when we ingest gluten, I hope that that is able to be mitigated or just, totally prevented in the future. But just an important reminder that you do have non-celiac gluten sensitivity, because I know a lot of people will hear, and I've heard of people with celiac disease going over to the Europe and having gluten there, and like putting that on social media and stuff that they can eat gluten
It's
in those
crazy,
areas.
right? Yeah.
Well, I don't believe it, to be completely honest. I think, like if you do have celiac disease, it's so important to be strict on the 100% gluten-free diet, no matter what.
And to always talk to your doctor if you're thinking about changing something up, because I think the internet is the wild, wild west. And while I'm suggesting this for you as a topic, because I think it is a really interesting scientific frontier, and we're just hearing so many interesting stories of people just doing better. And I'm like, well, why? And why do other people then have to struggle so much? And I think it's really interesting to believe that we could look at something different down the track. but at the same time, to very much accept what keeps us safe now
For sure.
And healthy now. And I always say, you've got your SOS, your current reality, your this is non-negotiable right now, otherwise things really go off the rails and I feel ill and I can't work and I get brain fog and all the things that come with autoimmune presentation, never mind all the gut stuff with celiac in particular. But then the exploration of the scientific conversation that's constantly evolving as well.
Yes, 100%. And as we said at the beginning of the episode, like having those two worlds hopefully combine in the future and looking at things holistically, because I'm 100% on the in that frame of mind that you're looking at the root cause of things rather than like a band-aid fix. And
yeah,
it got a long way to go though, don't we?
We really do.
Yeah. But look, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge around low tox here with us today. And I just find these aspects so interesting. And as I said, I'm just dipping my toes in the water about this stuff. And I find that, you know, it's not often spoken about in the mainstream, but I think it will be given a lot more attention in the future, especially the gut microbiome. But everything that goes along with that and just, you know, root causes of things.
100%. I can tell you, having started 15 years ago where I had two heads, and now seeing like New York Times and Guardian articles regularly talking about hormone disruptive chemicals, or the way we produce grains in different parts of the world and different agricultural chemicals that are playing into microbiome, health decline. I mean, you know, it is getting there. We are getting the awareness across the line that the way we're doing the world now ain't working. And things need to change. And the beauty is a lot of businesses have realized that too and cleaned themselves up in many different ways. So I'm really encouraged in what I've seen in these first 15 years of awareness building.
And you've been on your own, you know, journey going through some horrible health stuff, but you're using, you know, your own experiences to help spread awareness. And I just honestly want to thank you so much for that, because like I'm sort of in that same boat at the moment myself, like on that quest to sort of educate and spread more awareness about celiac disease and the gluten-free diet. And I feel like I'm sure you know this, like you're just kind of in an echo chamber sometimes and you're like shouting this stuff out and everybody's kind of like, well, what are you talking about? But the more science and facts that come out about it, you know, the more people actually start to understand and pay attention to it. So yeah, I'm going to look way more into low tox and I'm keen to dive deeper into everything and all the resources that you have. So thanks so much for taking the time to do this. And I'm sure we'll chat again soon.
Super welcome, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for taking the time to join me here on a gluten-free podcast. If you're enjoying it and think someone else would too, please share it with them. Also, I'd really appreciate you giving a rating and review on whatever podcasting platform you're listening on. You can find me on Instagram at a.gffamily or send an email to aglutenfreefamily@gmail.com. I'll add all this info in the show notes. Until next time, bye for now.